really saw Tibet. But she saw the good and the bad people. And
I'll tell you what I find not just useful but exciting. What I find exciting is to see exactly this, exactly the fact that there are many, many different rays of greatness that are possible. And very, very many, probably a greater amount of weaknesses that are possible. And when you examine the stories and the personalities and the life of the people that really gave us the Judaism that we have, so A, you know, you get to know what Yiddishkeit is, but you see how multifaceted it is. Is it is so, like, it's not just in the kind of story stuff that we're learning, you know, let's call it the, you know, Talmud light, you know, but if you go into real serious machloket, you know, Hillel Shammai, Abaye v'Rava, Rav and Shmuel, you know, real serious halachic machloket, what you always see, and that's the whole beauty of learning Gemara, is you always see, here you thought something was kind of simple, and then you see two completely different ways of looking at the exact same thing, and so much so that, you know, there's no right or wrong anymore. It's not just you don't know what's right or wrong, you really don't, there is no right or wrong. Just, oh, he's right, he's, you know, it's like the old story, he's right, how are they both right, you're right. Yeah, they both, that's also right. You know, that's exactly the fascinating thing about it. Now, it doesn't, it's the problem with it is, and one of the reasons why you have to have a certain type of, maybe it works better for male than female, as a matter of fact, that there is no what to do. You know, just give us the bottom line. There is no
practical? Like,
of course it's practical, because we have what we do when we don't know what to do. But that's the halacha. That's the halacha. When we don't know what to do, we go with the majority, we go with this. We have different systems as to what we do. I don't mean that, by the way, as any type of...
it's a compliment.
No, it is a compliment. It actually is a compliment. Right? On YouTube. I actually meant it as a compliment. In other words, it doesn't have that sort of like schizophrenic, you know, able, okay, this is okay, that's okay, everything's okay, you know. You know, there has to be. But the beauty of this is just as you take a mayor, who are we discussing here? Mostly three personalities. And we're continuing to discuss them. So now we're going to introduce a fourth one a little bit. But basically you're talking about Remeir, Remeir's wife, Remeir's teacher. That's pretty much what we've been discussing. We on the side, we talked about Rabbi Akiva, we talked about Benazai, we talked about Benzoma. You remember? One went crazy, one killed. Like, what we're talking about, that everybody has the same experiences, and everybody has a completely different reaction to it, and they're all holy reactions. They're all holy reactions. Except for Acher. Acher chose wrong. But we have to get into that too. Even that was Yahasi, a holy reaction, I believe. That doesn't mean that he chose correctly or did the right thing or he was a good person, but it wasn't so simple. It wasn't just like he was like, you know, guy on the street, hungry, ate treif. It was a much deeper type of an avera. Meaning, if the Gemara goes through pages and pages to teach us about him who didn't keep the Torah, so there's something to learn. So this is exactly the message that it goes into, that it, like a prism, it can shine in so many different ways, in so many different directions, in so many different colors, and that is Judaism. Probably the one point nobody gets, that is Judaism. That, you know. I always think about it on Shabbos, like, I don't know why on Shabbos, but, you know, like, there's such lip service given to the idea of individuality. Everybody's talking about individuality. You look at an advertisement for a school, you know, we cater to the individual. It's a lie. They don't cater to the individual. It's not true. It's just not true. I hate to say it, but it's not true. Do they really cater to the individual? Do they really interview each boy or girl and say, okay, we think you should end up being a Kabbalist, or you should be a halachist, or you should be a carpenter, or you should be a football player? Do they really cater to the individual? Or do they say the opposite way around? Everybody should be this. Now, how do we get all these individuals to fall into one melting pot? it'd be one thing. But at the same time, everyone's this is frustrating to me, if you haven't noticed. at the same time, everybody is always quoting all the proper verses and Chanoch Lanar Al Pi Darko and everything. But we don't believe it. We don't really believe it. I don't know why we don't believe it. I think it's because in order for Judaism to work, there has to be some kind of a system. And if there's, in order to have some, otherwise, like, it's all over the place. And if there's no system, it's like an army. Like, at the end, everybody's got to wear the same green thing, you know. Like, it's otherwise, you don't have an army. So if you want to have a system, you know, like something that, let's say, Lubavitcher Rebbe understood, everybody's got to dress the same. If you don't dress the same, you're not a soldier. You know, if you're a Chabadnik, you have to dress this way. That's what you have to do. It's a little bit hokey sometimes. A little bit like you're out of place. Doesn't make a difference. You know, so maybe it's that idea of creating a system, but then got to be very careful with our own kids, I think. Because what happens is then the system overtakes the educational, the personal growth and the personal education of the children. So what do you do with that? So you had to sort of agree that, yes, there has to be a system, and I'm all for the system, and I'll support the system. I'll write a check to the system. But at the end, is that system the right thing for my child, or for me, or you know, not even a question. I'm just saying children because it makes it easier to.
There are two seemingly overarching goals. The one is the Jewish people must continue, and we must cleave ourselves to Hashem. And you, as an individual, have to do it. You have to work out how to do it in such a way that everybody gets to do it, because we've all got to do it together.
And if you don't have the dilemma is stronger because if you don't do it as a system, then you can't do it. No, there's no individual that can do it. So automatically, we don't like individuality, but we keep talking about it. So here's a really hard trick to do, and it's a shame that only 10 of us know this trick. that you have to learn how to be a complete individual within the system. And I'll tell you something. This has nothing to do with what I'm talking about. I mean, it does have, it has everything to do with it, but nothing to do with it. But if you just buck the system, there's some big problems with that, too.
I don't really understand, to be an individual in the system. Everyone's an individual in the system.
You're not an individual if you're not allowed to, at the end, do what you can do best, fulfill your passion, and make the contribution that Hashem gave you uniquely to give. That's what I mean by an individual. I don't mean an individual even personality-wise, but even that can be stifled. But I'm talking about to make the contribution. It is individual, unique, and I would say outstanding, meaning standing out. People that have really, like Moshe Rabbeinu, like that have really made everything the way it is, Rabbi Akiva. Shamshin Revol Hirsch, the Rambam, choose your gadol, choose your era in history. It was never sort of the system person that changed the whole world, was it? Can you think of one example where it was it's not fair because you've got to think about these things. You have to obsess about this for a year. But that's what I think. I think any greatness that any of us can achieve, it's by not worrying about the system. But if we completely buck the system, then we can't achieve greatness with who? For who? I'll tell you a secret. Not much of a secret between you and the other 300 people over here. But I was just speaking to a very great person. And I was discussing this. I'm talking now over 30 years ago. I remember walking through the street of Yerushalayim discussing this with somebody who ended up becoming a big gadol. But then he was a little gadol. And he said to me, this was the upshot of the conversation, he says, in truth, he said, you have to really know how to do your own thing and make everybody else think you're doing the same thing that they're doing. Okay, so yeah, that stuck in my mind for a long time. That's the only way. It's a very, very complicated, but if you just are lazy and you just sort of like go with the system, then you end up with mediocre at best or below because the system itself has faults, as we all know. You say, why did I buy into this? The system itself is boring. The system itself is made to move the masses. Okay, so, you know, I mean, but we don't want a mild sea tongue, you know, Judaism here. It's like everybody's the exact same, you know, that's not what it's all about. So, that, I mean, just to, I over-addressed your question there, but it's absolutely true that the beauty of it is let's crawl into Breuer's mind, let's crawl into a mayor's mind, let's crawl into Adler's mind, those who judged them and understood them, and let's take it all and become like, you know, like many, many rays of light and see what happens. That's really what it's all about. Okay. Cale here so gently marked this the Gemara. Is it a little arrow there? Let me just catch you up, first of all, remind you. We were talking about Elisha ben Avuya, otherwise known as Acher. Great, great man, possibly the greatest in the generation, who is quoted, incidentally, all over the Talmud for his halachic expertise. Very seldom by name, only once. How do we know he's quoted if it's not by name? Because he's called Acherim Omrim. You'll have an opinion, you'll see Rabbi Akiva said this, Rabbi Yeshua said that, this one said that. And Acherim Omrim, which refers not only to Elisha ben Avuya, but to all of his different students that would quote him in halacha. His quotes were very, very important. Sometimes the halacha is like him. That's how much of an opinion he was as a posek. And having the insight to understand, not by name. So that's how, and he went Litarbutra off the derech, and mentioned that there was four different things that the Gemara attributes to his going Litarbutra. One of them was, we went over this at length, but one of them was that he saw the kid fall off the tree. How can he fall off the tree while he's doing the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Aim and Shivach HaKan? Supposed to have long life, that's where it says. The other one is he saw the horrible, horrible massacre of the 10 martyrs of Israel, many of them, and he saw the actual graphic, horrible sight of a dog running around with the tongue of the most eloquent speaker in Klal Yisrael. So that's like, you know, all of these were ironies. Weren't just tragedies, they were ironies. You know, the tongue that's sent over the Torah is the tongue that's in the mouth of the dog. So, there's ironies all around us all the time, but there's certain people that see these ironies. He saw the ironies. How can it be? It's a tragedy that a kid falls off a tree. It's an irony that he falls off a tree while doing the mitzvah that says you're going to have long life. That's an irony. Then the Gemara says that Rabbi Akiva took him into the Pardes, and that's what we learned about last week and the week before. But Rabbi Akiva walked with them into the Pardes, and there in this seance, or in this spiritual place where they were trying to look for meaning and trying to understand why the Jewish people at that time, time of the destruction of the temple. Why were they suffering so much? Why were they being removed from their homes? Why were they being killed in the street? Why? The Holocaust was going on. So they looked into it spiritually. And at that time, the Gemara reports, as we learned last week, that Ben Zoma lost his mind from the experience. Ben Azai lost his life from the experience, whatever that means. Elisha ben Avuya lost his faith. And Rabbi Akiva came out fine. Rabbi Akiva was good with the whole thing. So that's a third. Just give me a minute. That's a third reason that Elisha ben Avuya went to Litarbutra. And then the Gemara says the oddest part of it all is the Gemara says it happened in his bris already. And his bris, there was the story that we talked about that at his bris, his father was a very wealthy man. And invited everybody to the bris, and all the rabbis came to the bris, big bris, big balabas. And the rabbis were uncomfortable with the crowds of rich people. You know, they just weren't into, you know, these are Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yossi, you know, we're going to be walking around with a martini, you know, and and socializing. It wasn't their thing. So they went to another room. They said, come, let's learn Torah until the Moel gets here, until we do the bris. And some type of a miracle, I don't know if this is literal or metaphoric, but a flame came down from the heavens, it says, and encompassed these rabbis learning Torah, so much so that the father of Elisha ben Avuya, meaning Avuya, the host, the rich man, ran in and said, what's with the fire? What's with the fire? Lahachir beisiyatabah, did you come here to destroy my house? And they answered, no, we're not destroying anything. We're learning Torah. This is what happens when you learn Torah. Cool. This is what happens when you learn Torah. And he was so taken with this sight that he said, you know what? My son, who the bris is today, was an emotional, you know, who's not emotional at the time of the son's bris. My son, who's going to the bris today, he'll be able to learn Torah. I'll take care of it. He will not have one impediment. He will not have one financial stress. He will not have anything. If I can help it, I'll take care of it. And so it was. He raised him to be a genius in Torah. Says the Gemara that such a piercing remark that the whole thing was wrong, meaning that's not the reason to learn Torah because you want fires to come down from heaven. You learn Torah because that's what you're supposed to do, be a normal person. And being that his whole life was, his whole upbringing was shelo lishma, eventually he went off the derech. Okay, this is like something, you know, meaning you see somebody off the derech, so to speak, you know, a gadol goes off the derech. Imagine like the Chavetz Chaim went off the derech. You know, just not even thinkable. This would happen only because of the bris. It starts with the bris. It starts with the whole atmosphere in the house. Learn Torah, become a great scholar. Let's only talk scholarship. Get the best teachers, the best time. Why? Because, you know, look what you can get, a fire coming down from heaven or some other benefit. So those are the four reasons. He went off the sterile. He went Latar Busra. And that's what we discussed last week. Did you want to say something?
What is that? You say he lost his faith, but what did he lose faith in? Certainly didn't lose faith. I mean, not the way people lose faith today after such an experience.
So we spent a long time speaking about this last week.
Whereas he lost faith in the oneness of God, but he didn't lose faith in everything else.
What did he lose faith in? So the expression that is used in the Gemara for him having this experience in the Pardes, the paradise experience. Experience in the Pardes was that he was kitzetz benetios. So remember, we talked about it. He was pruning the plants. And what he basically ended up believing, it's not so hard to understand, what he basically ended up believing was that whatever goes on in the higher worlds, whatever goes on in the Shemayim, whatever is going on in the world of God, does not necessarily affect what's going on in this world. Apokaris. Absolutely unacceptable. That was the conclusion he came to. Why? If you see the beautiful, white, peaceful heavens, and you see the horrible killing that's going on with the Romans in Jerusalem, and you're seeing the massacres and pogroms and hunger, so you say to yourself, look, there's a great divide here. Something is wrong. And there are psukim that are connecting the higher worlds to the lower worlds and saying, well, if you do this mitzvah and you climb up the tree and you do the kibbutz and you do shiloh hakan, you'll have long life. Connection, right? That's a connection. Kid falls and he dies. What happened to the connection? The connection was severed. Kitzetz benetios. That the severance of that connection is what he saw. We spent a long time last week talking about the Matatra Malach. And I'll get back to that. It's a very important piece of this puzzle. But it's a puzzle. What exactly did he lose faith in? What type of faith? So he didn't become an atheist. That's not what he was. He wasn't an atheist. It wasn't just being pulled by some, like, you know, well, I want to make more money, or I want, you know, that wasn't it. It was a disconnect that was taking place between the Shemayim and the Aretz. And that was his problem. And he said, if it's disconnected, so I'll do what I want to do. What's the point? So where Rabbi Akiva was okay with connecting the Shemayim Va'aretz, even though they seem contradictory, where Ben Zoma couldn't handle the conflict and he lost his mind, Elisha ben Avuya yotzel Torah b'Israel. He changed his behavior to the behavior of not a Torah behavior. And this was the conversation, I'm telling you, this was the conversation of the rabbis of the Talmud and probably the whole Jewish people for centuries. It was a very, very, 150 years for sure. I could document the conversation that was going on about Elisha ben Avuya. This was a big deal. It wasn't a little thing. It was a really big deal. So, let's go a little further into the story, just to skip where the arrow goes. Fast forward a generation, and we have here Bito Shel Acher. Okay, Elisha ben Avuya, the main character in our story, has a daughter. Who's his daughter? We don't know. The only thing I know about his daughter is she had a son. And her son's name was Yaakov, and he was, again, a great rabbi, Rabbi Yaakov. He's in Pirkei Avos. Interesting, this Yaakov, because Rabbi Yaakov was the one who said that, when you read the verse about Shiluach HaKan, or when you read the verse about Kibud Av V'Aim, and it says you should have long life, he taught his students, It doesn't mean in this world. It means in the next world. So he answered the question, so much so that the people of the Gemara said, "Oh, if your grandfather only knew what you just said, he wouldn't have gone off the Torah." Well, that's silly. I mean, in a way, because he knew whatever he's going to say. He knew he would have probably said, "That's not what it says." It's pretty clear it's not talking about Olam Haba. But that's what the Gemara says, which is interesting. So, in between Acher and this Rabbi Yaakov, there was a daughter. The daughter was also from Bito Shel Acher. So, Bito Shel Acher, the story is just three lines, and I'll go and explain it. Bito Shel Acher Asya Lakame to Rebbe. She came to Rebbe. She appeared in front of Rebbe. Rebbe is Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, who is two generations later than Elisha ben Avuya. You had Elisha ben Avuya, you had Remeir, which would have been her generation. Well, I'm sorry, you had Remeir, and then you had the generation of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, who was a student of Remeir. So she was somewhere in between there, the daughter of Elisha ben Avuya, appears out of nowhere, comes to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, who was at that time already, there was already starting to be some peace with the Romans, and there was lots of poor Jews who lost their homes and lost their businesses and lost their money, and Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was doing well. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, the author of the Mishnah, was doing well. He was a very, very wealthy man. And he opened up, this is the background here, he opened up his bank accounts and his storehouses. And he said, anybody who's a Talmud Chacham, I will take care of their parnasa. Millions and millions of dollars that he gave out to these people. Why only Talmud Chacham? Why not all poor people? So he probably gave poor people money too. But he wanted to make sure that the Torah that was robbed from us by the Romans would be reestablished. So he dedicated himself to the reestablishment of Torah, which is why he redacted the Mishnah and did so many different things. He made peace. He was a great man. He made peace with the Romans after the Hadrian decrees. He was a great man. So he would give parnassus. So this woman comes to him and she says, "Parnaseni, Rebbe." She says, "Parnaseni, can you give me parnassa?" Amrila. So he said to her, "Bas miat, you are the daughter of whom?" He didn't know who she was, but probably she wasn't the Talmud Chacham, so I don't know, maybe she wasn't wearing a shaitel, so he figured he's not married. He just asked, "Who's your husband?" He said, "Who's your father?" Amar Loi, so she said to him, Bito Shel Acher Ani, I have the daughter of Acher, who you despise. Amr Law, so he said to her, do you have this scene in your mind? In other words, the leader, the rabbinic leader of the generation, this woman is coming in asking for some parnasa, and he's saying, who are you? And she's saying, my father was Acher. And he says to her, Adayin yesh mizaro be'olam, there are still children from Acher, something is left from Acher in this world. Like he was surprised. Because assimilated Jews don't usually last more than one generation or two. Do you know anybody, Reformed Jew whose grandfather is Reformed?
So he's not surprised that he had a daughter who was still alive.
No.
He's surprised that he had a daughter who was still
alive. A Torah took a daughter, yeah.
Like, why would she identify if her grandfather associated?
Amacher's daughter. Amazing. It's true, though. If your grandfather was a Reformed Jew, so either by the time you get to the third generation, either you have a Baal Tshuva or you have an assimilation completely.
But she was from.
So Rebbe, so that's why Rebbe Yehuda Anasi said, "Like, you're still you're here. What's Aksiv?" It says in the Iyov, "Lo did v'lo nechad ba'aboy beit tsar ben gurav." That Eov said that somebody who leaves the Torah will not have children that are part of the Jewish people. Amrila, so she said to him, so that was what that was his reaction. His reaction is, you're here. He had children, his children, his firm children, like amazing. Amrila, so she said to him, remember the context, she's looking for Parnassa. She says to him, Zachor l'tarasai v'al tiskar masav. Remember his Torah and don't remember what he did. In other words, what's a simple explanation over here? Don't dwell on the bad things that he did. Dwell on the fact that he was a great Talmud Chacham. He's a great Ben Torah. He studied, he contributed a lot to the Torah world. So Zachor l'tarato v'al tiskar masav. That's what she to kind of like gave a little musser to Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. And now the strangest thing happens. Miyad, at that moment, Yarda Eish, another one of those fires came down from the heaven, v'sichsecha safsalei shel Rebbe, and singed the chair of Rebbe. Okay, that's kind of like this meeting is getting strange. Fire comes on. Now, what did she say? She said, Rabbi, remember his Torah. Don't think about his ma'aseh. Don't dwell on his ma'aseh, on his deeds. Dwell on his Torah. That's a good point. Maybe it's not a good point. I don't know, but whatever. That's what she said. And Yarda Eish min Hashamayim, a fire comes down from Shamayim, and Sichsecha Safsalei shel Rebbe, and singes the chair of Rebbe. Bacha, at that moment, Rebbe started to cry. So we see he was an emotional person. Bacha v'amar Rebbe, Uma l'miskanin b'akach, if people that are anti-Torah sort of deserve this fire coming down from Shemayim. L'mishtav chimba, to those that are pro-Torah, alachas kama v'kama, how much more power do they have? Well, that's the end of the story for our purposes. So I want to try to explain this a little bit, if I can. What was she saying? He says, Reverend, this is the whole conversation. Whose daughter are you? I'm the daughter of Acher. Oh, you're still around? Remember his Torah, don't remember his Maisim. Fire, crying of Rebbe. Whoa, this is unbelievable. In other words, he has Torah. Look what he has and look what it did. So this idea, let me just share a little. This idea of Torah a fire coming down from the heaven into this world and not doing any damage per se. We find, to my knowledge, I'm not the biggest expert in the world, we find, I think, 4 times. We find it, and I'll tell you the different cases, and I want to learn what this fire was all about and its relevance to us and to Rebbe. We find that a few years earlier than this, when Beis Mikdash was destroyed, we find that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was the leader of the generation, previous generation, was leaving Kishaya Yotzeim Yerushalayim, when he was leaving Jerusalem, meaning running away from Jerusalem, Jerusalem on fire behind him. And he was walking with Rabbi Lazar and Arach. He was walking on a path out of Yerushalayim. We know exactly where that path is, towards Yavne. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is the one who said, "Give us Yavne." So they gave him Yavne. They threw him out of his home in Yerushalayim. And he was walking to Yavne with Elazar ben Arach. Yavne, walking to Ashdod, basically. And on the road to Ashdod, Elazar ben Arach, the Talmud tells us the story, said to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, he said, "You know, we're walking. Can we learn a little bit together about the Maisa Merkava?" Maisa Merkava is the story of the holy chariot, the most difficult to understand passage of the Tanakh, probably, is Yechezkel's Nevuah of Maisa Merkava. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, "What do you want to learn that for? Like, that's let's learn something easy. We're on the way. We have everything we own on our backs. Why are we learning this?" Well, the answer is simple, because where does the story of the Maisa Merkava, the book of Yechezkel, where does it come from? It comes from the exact same situation a number of centuries earlier when the first temple was destroyed. This was the second temple. When the first temple was destroyed, so Yechezkel was walking out of Yerushalayim, just like Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is doing now, 600 years later. Yechezkel was walking out. He had his prophecy, and what was the prophecy at that time? It was that, yes, where Yerushalayim is burning down. Yes, we're losing the presence of Hashem. But there's a certain portability. This is what the prophecy is all about. There's a certain portability to the Shekhinah also. In other words, at the end of the day, whether we go to Bavel, or whether we go to New York, or to England, or wherever we go, the Shekhinah comes with us wherever we are. It was in that prophecy that he said that if we build shuls, if we build communities, so the Shekhinah will be with us also. So it's kind of Merkava. The idea of Merkava is the Shekhinah on wheels. That's what it means. And that was his prophecy. When Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, you know, fast forward 6 centuries, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is walking out of Yerushalayim, Elazar ben Arach says to him, "Wouldn't it be appropriate if we go over the original prophecy of Yechezkel, which dealt exactly with a moment like this?" So the Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai agreed, and he got off of his donkey. He was on a donkey. Rabbi Elazar ben Arach was leading the donkey. He sat down on a stone. They started to learn. Yarda Esh min Hashemayim, and a fire came down from the heavens, and sichsecha and singed all the trees. Some say it didn't even singe it; it was just a fire that surrounded the trees. So a similar fire that happened to Rabbi at this moment, a similar experience. I described to you the bris of Elisha ben Avoya. It was at that bris that the Chachamim were learning, and Avuya walks in and he sees a fire coming down from Shemayim. So there's a fire again. What's this fire? What's this fire? And then there's a Zohar. The Zohar says that Rabbi Akiva, at the end of his life, was sitting with his students towards the end of the last year or two of his life, was sitting with his students, and he was revealing to them such unbelievable secrets that nobody knew, Kabbalistic secrets. And as he would learn with them, the Zohar says that a fire came down from Shemayim as he would learn. Now, again, I don't know whether, you know, there was actually heat, fire, or something else was going on, but let's just try to understand it a little bit as much as we're able to understand it. So here's what I think. Here's what I think, and important for us. Moshe Rabbeinu, the hero of these parshios, shepherd walking through the desert, what does he see? What does he see? Burning bush. Interesting thing about the, see, a burning bush is no big deal. You know, the whole summer we look out our windows over here and you see burning bushes. The whole Beit Shemesh is burning bushes. Somebody lights a match, somebody throws a cigarette, burning bush, big deal. The chap was, the thing that got his attention was that the bush is not burning. Hasnei nenu ukal. The bush is not being consumed. That's already something. It's not, this burn, the bush is staying exactly as it was before, green, fresh, beautiful. What's going on? Moshe Rabbeinu said, what's going on? What was going on? What's going on is this. Understand this very deep idea. That in this world, wherever anything good happens, the way Hashem created the world with the Kabbalah is full of this idea, there's always a negative counterpoint to everything positive that's there. The most wonderful thing in the world is children, but the thing that causes us the greatest pain is also children. Second most wonderful thing is marriage. Second most painful thing. It's kachas, money. Money is great. Money causes sorrow. To the degree that something is wonderful, that's how much. The way it works Kabbalistically is that it's like fire. Fire is one of the most potent energies in the whole creation. Fire, you can cook with fire, you can eat with fire. Fire, you know, you can take a balloon up to the sky with fire. Heat and fire is very, very strong. But it's always at the expense of something. You can't have fire unless you're consuming fuel. So you can have a beautiful wood-burning fireplace in your living room, but it's only going to work if at the end of the night there's no more wood in the wood-burning fireplace. You got to go out and chop wood. So everything's expensive as it comes out. You know, you have the beautiful fire, but you've consumed the wood. This is the situation in Olam Hazeh. In Olam Haba, or on a higher level, let's put it that way, if you really know what's going on, there's absolute good. This world is hard to find absolute good. In a higher world, you can find absolute good. What happens when you have absolute good? You can have a fire, and it's not at the expense of anything. It's not consuming anything. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu is walking, and he sees a fire. Okay, fire is fire. Must be consuming something. No, Hasnei nenu ukal, the bush is not being consumed. So he said, this fire is not a fire which is part of nature, because nature doesn't allow for that type of thing. This is a fire which is obviously coming from a place which is kulaitai, which is only good. And that's why it's not consuming its fuel. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu saw. Hasnei nenu ukal. And he saw it exactly. He called it right, and he saw it right. So fire at that time, that moment, became the symbol of spirituality in this world. That there's a possibility of connection from a higher world to this world, which is manifested very simply in a fire that doesn't destroy. So if you can understand a fire that doesn't destroy, then you can understand the fire that was there when the Torah people were learning at the bris of Elisha ben Avoya. A fire that doesn't destroy. A fire that doesn't destroy. You can understand the fire that came down to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai when he and Rabbi Elazar ben Arach were studying about the Maaseh Merkava. There was a fire. A sign of true spiritual presence is a fire that doesn't consume. They all saw the sneh, That's what they saw. They all saw the snap, whether they saw it or they felt it or however you want to understand the experience. Whatever you want. It's all good. That's why it says in the Chumash. The Chumash says that there was a fire on the Mizbeach in the Beis HaMikdash, or in the Mishkan, or in the Beis HaMikdash, that was always burning, miraculously burning, on the side also of the menorah, near Maravi, was always burning, and every Yontif they would open the curtain, and everybody should see the miracle of the burning of the Ner Tamid, which we used to have here, the miracle of the Ner Tamid, and they would say, "Oh, we see that Hashem is with us." So the fire that doesn't go out, meaning the fire that the fire goes out, you run out of fuel, goes out, the gas thing runs out, it goes out. The fire that doesn't go out, that's why we have a Ner Tamid and Shul, is a sign of the existence of spirituality, of godliness in our world. Do you understand this? It's a deep idea. So that's why, by the way, this was just while we're here, this was the Hanukkah story, because the Greeks came and they put this fire out. And the Hashmonaim came and they relit the fire. Okay, light a fire, light a fire, light a candle, you get a fire. It was an interesting fire. The miracle was, it was a fire that didn't consume the oil. It's supposed to be consumed in one day. It wasn't consumed. Oh, everybody said, this is not just about a war, and this is not just about creating a state. This was a fire that doesn't get consumed. Again, we have with us the burning bush. It's the burning bush that went right into the time in Chashmonaim, and that fire's lasted for another 200 years. So that's what we mean when we see when we talk about the fire. Let's get it very, very clear. A force from Shemayim in this world, the opposite of the disconnect that Acher spoke about. It's the fire is the opposite of exactly the Kitzeitz Venetios, the pruning of the trees that Elisha ben Avuya was talking about. Here, fire, there was Hashem coming into this world. That is the connection. That is the connection. We could talk today. We could talk about Nadav and Avihu. There's so many things to talk about with fire. It's such an interesting thing. But a fire that doesn't consume. There are different ways of bringing the Shekhinah into this world. She says as follows: the daughter of Acher. She said, "Zachar l'tayrasai, val tiskar l'maisav. Remember his Torah." And don't think so much about his maisa. So here was something very new. See, we look at, he was a learned man, but he didn't behave correctly. That's the way we hear that, right? That's what our ears hear. That's not what she was saying. I don't think that's what she was saying. She was saying that when you talk about the way the world works, the way the Tzimtzum works, of something very spiritual, very godly, coming into this world and being mitzamtzem into something physical. Ultimately, the Torah came down, there's another place, on Har Sinai, there was a fire also. Har Sinai was Bor Baish. The Torah comes down, and it has to, as I mentioned, I said this many times, it has to permeate the earth. It has to manifest itself. Not just in keeping kosher and having a mezuzah, but in being a nice person and derech eretz. If the Torah doesn't hit ground, so then the Torah didn't hit ground. The Torah didn't make it all the way. It's like being in an airplane, you know, for 14 hours and, you know, does everything except it can't land. So, my actually from the 14 hours of safety in the air, if it can't make a landing. Sorry, we can't land. We did a good job until now, no? Everything's fine. Like, so if it can't land, then you haven't arrived. You don't get to where you want to go. You haven't got the goal. God's goal in Torah is that it should hit Earth. But on the way, there are a number of tachanot. There's a tachana. There's many. I mean, we know that there's four worlds. It goes through Atzilus, Abriya, Yetzirah. We spoke about it a lot with Tamar and Devorah. Nefesh HaChaim. We know that there's 7 spheros or 10 spheros, as Chesed, Gvura, Tiferes. There's a lot of bus stops in the pipe of creation before something comes here, and each one of those places requires some kind of a tikkun. So Elisha ben Avuya, his daughter pointed out, he said, look, he didn't do a tikkun in the world where he messed up. He didn't do a tikkun in this world because his actions were not Torah actions. But that doesn't mean that he didn't accomplish something very, very great on a higher world where the tikkun was Torah. Let me take it to you a little bit further, if you could just stay awake another couple of minutes. Like in the whole tahalich of how spiritual is it? God is completely spiritual. The world is physical. So how does one come to the other? It's tzimtzum. But in that whole tahalich, you have nefesh, ruach, neshama. Famous naran, nefesh, ruach, neshama. The nefesh is the world that we live in. The ruach is something like davening and that which connects, the pipe that connects ruach, speech, which connects this world to a higher world. And then you have neshama, our neshama. Neshama belongs to a different world. Doesn't even belong to this world. The neshama that we have in us doesn't even belong to this world. It's not like our hands or our eyes. It's our neshama. The neshama belongs in a higher world. So the way it works is the mitzvahs that we do, the chesed that we do, all that, that's in the world of nefesh. The davening that we daven, that's in the world of ruach. If you're learning Torah correctly, lishma, you're making your tikkun here. In other words, you're the raw material that's going into the processor, which is making the beautiful world that we have, also has to go through the tachana of Torah. So says his daughter to Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, look, you know, is the world better now? Is there more Torah for my father? Have you made peace with the Romans? Is God blessing us? Maybe his tikkun wasn't here. Maybe his tikkun was here in the world of Torah. So zechar l'tarasai v'al tiskar l'maisa. Okay, that's a strong message from this woman standing in front of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, greatest rabbi of the generation, but in all generations. Miyad, says the Gemara, what happens immediately? A fire comes down from heaven and hits his chair. Okay, what does that fire mean? Now that we know all about fire, what does that fire mean? That there is a connection, there's a possibility of a connection from a higher world, something which is pure good, something which doesn't consume energy, something from a higher world reaching this world, and it doesn't do any, doesn't hit ground, doesn't do damage, it doesn't consume anything. The tikkun of Aish. It's the tikkun of Aish. So Rabbi Yehuda must have understood that. Like, you can't just do everything here. I guess maybe he did do something on this level. And in fact, in the Mishnah, he quotes him. So how could he be against him? There was a contribution here, and it was the contribution of the fire of the Shechina, which is still here with Klal Yisrael, at least in some part, thanks to him. And that was her message. So let's end with this. If you go back, I mean, you really have to do me a favor and try to digest this, because I think it's just important, fundamental. If you go back to the contemporary of this woman was Rabbi Meir. Right? This was a crowd. You know? This is a crowd. Your father is my teacher. Your father went off the derech. Okay, we're Bruria, Rabbi Meir. Could see it, right? I'm in a doubt if they were playing like, you know, Maja or something together. But these were the generation. This was the generation after the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. Rabbi Meir was always talking about, you know, this was his class. He was dangling the sherets, and is saying, this is really treif. I'll show you 150 reasons why it's kosher. And then, as you said, but you don't eat the sherets. In other words, on a deeper level, everything is good. On a higher level, everything is good. So Remeir, who was the student of Acher, was really saying the same message as she was saying. On a higher level, there's a lot of Torah here. And there's a lot can be learned, and there's a lot that it's doing for the world, even on a Kabbalistic level. And I'm dangling the Sheretz to show you that even the Sheretz, meaning Acher, has a lot of good to it. So when they asked Remeir, how did you learn from this guy Elisha ben Avoya even after he became a Rasha? So he said, look, I found the fruit, I threw away the shell, and I ate the inside. That's okay. So the Gemara says, you remember this Gemara? The Gemara says that there was nobody as great in the generation as Rebbe Meir. But we don't do halacha like him because we don't know what he's talking about. So that's what the Gemara says. They couldn't understand what he was talking about. Not just because he was confusing or he was too deep or he was too genius. He was talking in a whole different world. If he was able to learn from Elisha, he was talking about the deep, deep inner sanctums of even a sheretz. He was talking about doing a tikkun here on this world. He wasn't in this world. So the halacha can't be like him, as great as he is, because this world is all about halacha. The world that we live in is a world of halacha. And Remeir, like his Rebbe, was in a different world. The difference between him and Remeir, as you say, is Remeir didn't swallow the sheretz. So, if you think about Elisha ben Avoya, he just felt, this is a terrible thing, but he just gave up on this world. That's what happened. He gave up on this world. His kind of prophecy that he had was, this is what we learned last week, he came to Shemayim and he saw that a malach is in charge of the whole thing. In other words, you're giving this world, the way he saw it, is run by a clerk. This is not even, this is the metatron. This is not even, so he had this big mistake, and his big mistake was, a mistake we should never make, that he wasn't able to reconcile the goodness. That's why when his grandson said, why can't you reconcile it? Why do you have to only think of this world, Babish? Why can't you think of Olam Haba? They said, okay. The Chacham said, if he would have thought of that, he wouldn't have gone off the Derech. He didn't think that way. What he's thinking was, I don't see godliness in this world. So, okay, so I've said a lot of things. I think, I hope we're thinking about. I have to decide if we keep on going with Acher or going to the next personality. But this is, I believe, the depth of it, which we have to sum up. Thank you.
Who said, how is she to know what good Acher did?
Yeah.
How does she know that it's in his source, that things are happening on a higher realm, or that there's peace for the Romans?
This is the way she saw it. This is the way she saw it. A learned woman grew up in the house of Acher. She had a mother too. and that's the way she saw it. Incidentally, this Elisha ben Avoya, from a historical point of view, became a Christian. That's what he became. The early Christians, there were before Christianity developed into what it is now, like, Sunday morning, go to church. It was a very almost close to Jewish belief. They certainly still dressed like Jews and in the first century Christians. But basically, if you'll read the New Testament, which I have a number of times, if you read the New Testament, what you'll see is that the message, I believe, of all the Gospels is that this world is the world of the flesh. This is not an important world. Get out of this world as fast as you can. You don't really have free choice here. Well, it's true. The most extreme, the most extreme expressions of Christianity, at least in the early Christianity, like the cultish, is just like, just be a suicide bomber, or just kill, or Yashkev himself, I'll die for your sins. It was very much, the flesh is evil, the sinning of the flesh. That's all they talk about, the flesh, the flesh, the flesh. But Judaism, flesh is a good thing, flesh. You're all the flesh. Okay, knock off a little bit by the bris milah, but basically, flesh is a good thing. Like, you want to try to be healthy and try to live long. It's a whole different idea. Why? Because this is all about, we're all about mitzvos. We're all about tikkun olam. We're all about making the world a holier place and a better place and doing chesed. And it's not just about, you know, the devil made me do it and I'm here. This is all a big test and let's get into the next world. The world is important. So it's interesting that his hashkafa became Christian in the sense that he was mazniach this world and mazniach halacha, like every other Christian. Pushed it away. Just ignore it. What happened to the early Christians that they stopped keeping mitzvahs? Why did that happen? They were the ones that were Jews. Why did they stop keeping mitzvahs? Because this world is not important. It was as simple as that. This world is not important. Let's deal with spiritual things. You know, so we'll sing hymns and we'll think about God and we'll be holy and we'll be spiritual. But it doesn't work. You have to give tzedakah. You have to put on tefillin. You have to. And what did Yashka keep on saying? If you read it, it's like, you know, these rabbis, these Pharisees, they're more worried about the thickness of the straps in their tefillin than the depth of the love in their heart. Okay, it's all good mussar, but the fact of the matter is that he was against mitzvahs. I don't know if he put on tefillin or he didn't put on tefillin, I don't know, but he was against the accentuation or the emphasis on this world. And that's where Elisha ben Avuya fell out. So his daughter came along and said, okay, but at least he was working in that world. You know, at least that world is something. And Reb Meir came along and said, let me show you the Sheretz. Yeah, there's something deep there also. At least there's something deep there also. Don't push it away. Lagabri, and the lesson for us is, you know, you got to be very careful because the whole Gemara that talks about the story of Yashka is how we pushed it away completely with two hands, and that was the wrong thing to do. Apparently, not that we should become Christians, that's not what I'm saying, but we should push the man away, because what happened was that he became something else. He started something else. He became an Acher also. Became an Acher. So she's saying maybe you shouldn't push it away so much. Okay.
Like Timna.